This is MSONewsSports.com, and this is Trending Now with Josh Arnold. I'm Rick Moore, along with Josh and our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. And as they say, better late than never, and hopefully we're going to make some contacts this morning. Morning, Josh. And
Good morning.
Sorry for the fact that I had to push you off an hour later today.
That's fine.
Apologize for that to you and your guests. What do we got lined up?
We have first guest is local attorney Meredith Fine, who's president of the Soya Free Library and talking to us about the library. We have Joanne Castano of Castano Design Associates, an advocate for the arts, who's going to be talking with us. And Carrie Chapman Brough, who is the program director at Northeast Arts Spotlight Program.
Okay, and where is Costanzo Design Association? Where's that?
Gloucester.
In Gloucester. Okay. All right, so we'll be right back.
Harrington's Trophy and Awards has been rewarding the North Shore for over 25 years. Hi, I'm Kevin Harrington.
And I am Marty Harrington, and we are known for our local family business, providing custom trophies, plaques, screen printing, embroidery, and much more. We offer a variety of services such as engraving wedding gifts, medals for charity walks, youth sports trophies and uniforms. From the newest style performance wear to your everyday work shirts, we are your one-stop shop. Whether it's a fantasy football, warm-up suits for your team, end-of-the-year banquet gifts, or recognizing excellence, we pride our business on our exceptional customer service and quality products. Located in Lynn, or visit our website at harringtontrophy.com.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. One of the ways to judge a company is in its staying power. At Moynihan Lumber, we've been doing our thing now for 55 years. Serving all of Greater Boston, Moynihan Lumber offers lumber and building materials, doors and windows, decking, kitchen cabinets, and Ace Hardware. Visit Moynihan Lumber at any of our three locations, in North Reading, Beverly, or Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at moynihanlumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Gloria Food Store is still Beverly's number one deli, and no matter what New England weather is thrown at us, Gloria is open. With fresh bread delivered from Sunray Bakery every morning, Gloria can provide party platters, calzones, hot trays, cold trays, salad trays, and finger sandwiches for whatever you have planned. Call in your order at 978-922-3613, stop in at 268 Rantoul Street, or visit GloriaFoodStore.com.
And welcome back to Trending Now with Josh Arnold. And our first guest is local attorney Meredith Fine from Gloucester. Meredith, welcome to the program.
Oh, hi, Josh. It's great to be back.
Well, just kind of a refresher, although I know your background, but tell us a little bit about your background, and then we'll segue into the good work you're doing in the community with the library.
Well, thank you. I came to Gloucester as the editor of the Gloucester Daily Times many years ago, and then went to law school and have a practice here in Gloucester. And I am president of the library board and chair of the licensing board.
Ah, well, yeah, I forgot about that one. So let's go to the library. We could talk about the licensing piece in a bit if we have time. What is involved in being on the board and being president, and what functions do you perform? And tell us about what the library is.
Well, that's a very interesting question, Josh, more interesting than many people may know, because the library is actually a corporation. It's a separate, independent corporation set up by the legislature, I want to say back in the 70s.
Okay.
And part of our budget is funded by the city. So our staff is paid by the city and their city employees, and city funds pay for some of our books and materials, but not all. But it's a weird little hybrid. My understanding is there are only 10 like it in the state.
Hmm.
And the board is a separate board. It's not appointed by the city. We have corporators who appoint our board members. We have our own bylaws. And we are an independent public agency. And so I am the president of a corporation, and I also supervise, not directly, but in a general sense, 15 or 16 city employees. And I'm fortunate to have just an absolutely fantastic board and fantastic library director. And I have no problem delegating.
Yeah.
And so they do a great job.
What is the long range? I mean, I know the Sawyer Free Library was donated by Samuel Sawyer.
Yep.
And he's also the person who left money for the Sawyer Medals.
Yep, among other things. I think he also left Ravenswood Park.
Yes.
Think his footprint in Gloucester is large.
Yes, and so it's grown over the years. I remember the library I went to as a kid, and then they added the addition, and they've done a lot. But libraries in general are changing because of technology and reading habits. How are those factors play into?
No, that is a fantastic question, because so many people say to me, "Who uses libraries anymore?" Well, I'll tell you, our usage is going up. If I could change the word library to Sawyer-Free Information and Community Center, I think that would better describe the role that the library plays here. People need computers. People, we have free DVDs, all kinds of games, and all kinds of access to the physical library is only part of what we do. We have a very, very active internet presence and access to all kinds of resources on the web through your local library. And we also do a lot of, we still have books and love books and lend them. And Gloucester residents can get books from all over this part of the state through our interlibrary loan, which is very, very actively used. Every day, the interlibrary loan truck backs up with another load of books to be loaned out. We have all kinds of programs. Our children's room is constantly busy with activities and concerts and storytelling and magic and movies and all that great stuff. It's the most used public building in the city.
That's great.
It is.
It is.
Now,
it
leads to some interesting problems, because the building itself needs to be substantially renovated for the 21st century library. And that's the biggest thing. One of the biggest things we're working on now is how to upgrade the interior of the building.
Hmm. Great. What are some of the other long-range things that are, on the radar for the library?
Well, that's a great question. The physical plant is dominating our thinking at the moment. We have a number of short-term issues, medium-term issues, and long-term issues. And that's tied into our strategic plan, which is how to keep this institution relevant into the 21st century. And that, to answer that mission of how to remain relevant and serve the public, you need to know what the public wants today, what the public is going to want tomorrow, and how we can provide those services in our through our physical plant, through our internet resources, and with the staff that we have. And so just that process, we're continually trying to answer that question. What do people want today, and what are people going to want 10 years, 20 years from now?
How much of the location of the library is key to its success? I know that, there was a point, there are periods of time where we've talked about moving City Hall to the Fuller School and all of that, and I won't get going on too much of a tangent on that, but I know that there were issues when that was raised about why it's important to have City Hall on Dale Avenue, because
yeah,
a lot of people can access it that way.
Especially since we built a new parking lot in the back.
Yeah.
The access has gotten better. That's a fantastic question. These are great questions, Josh. That's true that a few years ago, before I got on the board did do a study and determined that they did not want to move from the central government area. this question has arisen again as we start to look at how best to use the space that we have. Should we be looking elsewhere? I think that's a question that we should ask. My own, without prejudging the answer, my own preference would be to stay in the heart of the city.
That's where it's always been, and I hate to say that that should be a driving force in it, but there's a product familiarity that permeates the community that's where the library is, and I know that as things change, you know, the YMCA is across the street, and the YMCA needs parking, and they may end up in the Fuller property, and all of that. I'm wondering if, as those kinds of things fold out, if those provide any other opportunities for the library.
You're making an excellent point. There's a lot of activity going on in that on that corner of Middle Street, Dale Avenue. I don't feel any great appetite to move. But I think that I think as a board, we need to make sure that we answer even the uncomfortable questions. And a lot of that has to do with, can we be a 21st century library where we are now?
Yeah.
Again, without prejudging the answer and without being an expert in library science, I would hope that we could. But we have a responsibility to at least ask the question.
Well, that's great. Tell us a little bit about your work with the licensing board. What does that involve?
Well, the funny thing about that, Josh, is that I don't drink. So it's kind of a weird place for me to have landed.
Yeah.
So the library board, the licensing board is a child of prohibition. Back in the 30s, when there were bootleggers and so forth, the state legislature created a scheme of managing liquor licenses to reduce corruption and to limit the amount of alcohol. Those were different times.
Yeah.
And so in cities, in towns, the licensing board is usually the Board of Selectmen.
Okay.
Here in the city, we, by statute, we have a 3-member board. One member must be a Democrat, one member must be a Republican, and then the third member can be of either party or no party.
Okay.
That's in the statute.
Wow.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
Does it say
that one has to be dry and or?
I'm the designated Democrat on the board. I had the great honor of following Michelle Harrison, who was chair twice, once about 15 years ago, and then came back a few years ago. And she did a magnificent job. They always like the chair to be an attorney. Because although the law on liquor licenses is not especially complicated, you are serving sometimes a judicial function. And so,
tell me about that. Explain that a little better, because I'm guessing a lot of the listening audience doesn't know that.
Well, a license is like a piece of property in a way, and if you're going to, for example, take it away from somebody, you'd really better know what you're doing, and you hold hearings. For example, we had a situation where a local store sold some beer to an underage person, and we had a hearing and suspended their license for 3 days, and that's a quasi-judicial function.
Okay.
And if you decide not to renew somebody's license, for example, we decided not to renew the license at the tavern, you have a hearing. And so the chair needs to be somebody who knows how to run a hearing and who knows how to write a decision.
Okay.
And because those decisions, you often get appealed. And so that's why they like to have an attorney sitting in that chair.
Very well. Well, I appreciate your taking time out of your busy schedule.
Oh, no, it's a pleasure to talk to you.
To be a guest. And
I see you at the Polar Plunge on Saturday?
Assuming that the snowstorm doesn't push us out, I'll be the polar bear. I'll be the guy wearing the white outfit, yeah.
Excellent. Thank you for all you're doing, Josh.
Thank you, Meredith. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Hi, this is Jeff Klickstein, General Manager at Moore GMC in Danvers. Did you know that we're a family-owned and operated dealer that's been serving the North Shore since 1969? When you come to see us, you're treated like part of our family. GMC has a great lineup with Sierra pickups, the ever-popular Acadia, and the redesigned 2016 Terrain. We are the dealer that will provide you with the best buying experience possible. We are conveniently located off Route 128 at Exit 23, 80 High Street in Danvers. I personally invite all of you to come in, come visit us, see why our customers keep coming back for all their automotive needs.
Welcome back to Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Our next guest is Joanne Castano of Castano Design Association. Joanne, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Josh. Good to be here.
We ask folks, first time on the show, to tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and then let's talk about what you're doing with the arts community in Gloucester or Cape Ann.
Okay. I am a sculptor, artist, living in Gloucester. And I've been working on advocacy for the arts for many, many years. Starting off, I was living in Italy in the mid-70s, working in a model yard and also foundries doing artwork in an international arts community near Carrara, Italy. And that was my first experience of being in an international kind of art community. And when I returned to the United States, I wrote a CEDAR, Comprehensive Employment and Training Act program, with the help of the mayor from Newburyport at the time. That was back in 75, 76, and we were trying to create a community cultural centers that had gone through urban renewal in those communities and put in a grant to hire artists and start cultural centers doing much like cultural economic development that is being done today. So I put in a proposal with the help of Byron Matthews, who was the mayor at the time in Newburyport, and also did one in Salem and Brockton, thinking that I would get lucky with one of them. All three were accepted, and then, therefore, I was employing 18 artists in each of those communities to create cultural centers. So Newburyport today, through those initial seed fundings, is the firehouse. The theater group there took over the projects after the first year and started working on that project, which took a long time, but they finally made it. And in Salem, we did the Old Town Hall and worked very closely with the planning department there and had a cultural center for about 7 years going there. And in Brockton, that was a little tougher community to get things going. And eventually, after I kind of retired from that work and moved to Gloucester, which was more of a working art community to me, and I started doing my own sculpture again, but then got involved with Harriet Webster, who was doing the programs trying to do feasibility studies through the city council to see if there could be an art center, a maritime museum, and got involved in that initiative. And once the maritime center was created, a few of us asked if we could continue with the art program, and we established the Committee for the Arts. From the Committee for the Arts, then we got involved in developing also the master plan for the city and put in the cultural arts within the master plan, and that was in 2001 that was published. And we also were contacted by the Mass Cultural Council and started working on an Adams grant to create a fuller, robust system that would have the city established with being involved in the arts, as well as a community cultural coalition, and we created Sea Arts that won the Adams Awards back in, what year was that? That was 2003 that we started getting those awards. And since then, I've continued being an advocate for the arts and working with a lot of the initiatives on the state and national level that try to push forward. I worked with the Sawyer Free Library. I know that Vine was just on, and they were the ones that pretty much paid my way while I was developing a lot of the structure and infrastructure and research in order to pursue trying to do an art development within the community. So I worked for the Sawyer Free Library, establishing their website and their training program. We had a computer lab there, and that went on to about 3 years. I was training the not only the entrepreneurs in Gloucester and the nonprofits, but also the seniors. We had a program for 3 years there, and they pretty much, seniors started doing it themselves over at the senior center. So we just continue advocating for the arts and working very closely with the Mass Cultural Council, and that's the Adams Grant in there, and they're moving forward with their next initiative, and that will be festivals, as well as looking into new programs for the state. And that will kind of link all these communities together. As I think Massachusetts is pretty well recognized across the country as being very innovative in what they're doing for cultural economic development, community development, and hopefully putting more money in the pocket of artists and having them involved at the table at the beginning of any kind of community development plans. So that's about where. That's as short as I can get on all of
that. Oh, that's great. I understand from our talks before the show that the Gloucester Arts Council initiative is looking for a part-time project manager. Can you tell us a little bit about that, what they're looking for, and what that process for selection might include?
Well, there was a grant put out. Karen Ristabens from Rocky Neck Art Colony had written a proposal, another Adams Art grant, trying to establish a city post or city office for cultural development. And within that process, she brought in as partners myself and also FIAC. And those are the three partners within the grant process. And the city has agreed to, at least, you know, at the beginning, to give their in-kind donations of the staff. And actually, I'm sitting there now because we have a meeting going on within the city. So we have use of the city and their staff to try to create this initiative. So it's a planning grant for 2 years. And we're in the process of putting out a call for a person to take the position of project manager to follow the initiative of the grant application. And we have a lot of work that's kind of involved in that. What they're trying to do is pretty much come up with a new master plan within the community of what the arts and culture is should be in Gloucester, and involving deeper into the community so that we can reach into the neighborhoods and find out what the neighborhoods are looking for within a cultural plan for the city. And we're looking for a person to lead that initiative. We have matching funds that we need to raise. So we're just taking applications now into that process. So it's kind of exciting, and so far the applications are coming in, and that's the meeting I just stepped out of.
Okay.
to take this call.
Great. Well, I appreciate your taking the time to fill us in on what's going on with the art and cultural community here in Cape Ann and in Gloucester in particular. And we hope maybe we could have you back later as things progress and tell us about how the maybe when you hire somebody as the project manager and the work continues with the revitalization of the master plan, if you will. We can have you back and talk some more.
Sure, and if anyone is looking for the job description or more information on the job, they can go to the Mass Cultural Council's Hire Culture and look up the Gloucester jobs in Gloucester, and it will come up under CArts. And so that would be if they go to hireculture.org, they can look up the position for the part-time grant project manager under Sea Arts.
Great.
And you'll have all the information there and can apply.
Super. Thank you so much for...
Lots of people to apply.
Okay, Joanne. Thank you.
All right.
Okay, thank you for all you do for the arts.
Have a good day.
Yep,
bye-bye.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're thinking about replacing the windows in your home, please see the Anderson Woodwright replacement windows. Why Anderson? With low E glass, low maintenance exteriors, and rich wood interiors, you can turn simple window replacement into significant home improvement. See the Anderson Woodwright replacement windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in North Reading, Beverly, and Plaistow, New Hampshire.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Hello, sports fans. This is Wally, the voice of Honeydew Donuts. All right, you're getting ready to go to a game. I don't care if it's morning, afternoon, or night. Don't forget, stop into Honeydew Donuts and get yourself a cup of coffee. How about that large iced coffee? That Mocha Madness one is unbelievable. You'll think you went to Honeydew Heaven. So remember, you heard it here first on MSONewsSports.com. And remember the name. It's Honeydew Donuts, the only way to go.
With Josh Arnold, our next guest is Carrie Chapman Bro. Did I say that right?
Yes, that's perfect.
And she's the program director at Northeast ARC, in charge of the Spotlight program. Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's exciting to be on your show.
Thank you. I'd like to maybe first we have folks do give us your bio. Tell us about you, how you, your background, education, family, and then we'll go into your career and so forth.
Sure, I'd be happy to. I think my greatest job is I'm a mom. I have a 5-year-old son who's just an absolute delight. He's hilarious. But as a career, I started at Framingham State. It was college then. It's now university. And I wasn't quite sure what I wanted to do, so I figured psychology was probably a good place to start. And I did a bachelor's in psychology, and it focused on research, which was very exciting. After I finished my undergrad, I did what a lot of people do, which is I waited tables for 6 months and very much enjoyed that and got to meet some really fantastic people. And I started, through a connection at the restaurant, I started working in Lexington, at the Lexington Children's Place, where I worked in a classroom for young children on the autism spectrum. That's where I really sort of found my calling in working with children and families who have autism, and also was exposed to behavior analysis, which is a very structured type of instruction and teaching. I loved that. That was fantastic. And then from there, I decided to pack up my Buick with everything that I had and drive to California, where I found a fantastic opportunity, again, working with young children on the autism spectrum. And really got more involved and more exposure in the community and strengths and challenges of families, and then had another opportunity to work with a couple of different startups, and where I worked in homes. So instead of center-based work, I then worked in people's homes and really supported families who were struggling with their child's behavior specifically, and I got to meet just fantastic, amazing families, lots of different cultures. I really got to work on my Spanish, which is not as good as it was back then. And after my son was born, I could not deprive my mother of her natural born right to be a grandmother. It just was not going to happen. And so we moved back to Massachusetts, and I found this fantastic opportunity at the Northeast ARC. I had done theater and acting all through high school and college, and I was introduced to this program called the Spotlight Program that ties in all of my favorite things into one program. It's a fantastic program that utilizes acting, drama, improv, media, creativity to create a socially enriched environment for any child or any young person who struggles socially. So we have a lot of folks that come to us who do have a diagnosis of autism, or what was formerly known as Asperger's syndrome. But we have lots of kids who have different mental health diagnoses, kids who have been significantly bullied, and sometimes children that are just shy. And they're able to come and have opportunities to meet people and establish friendships that they wouldn't have had opportunities elsewhere. So it's an absolute wonderful program. And that is what I do every day. And the best part about it is we offer a summer camp. And so we have a 6-week summer camp that we run in Peabody. And it's 6 weeks of social skills, video games, lots of funny antics, and we make movies. So at the end of the summer, we have a red carpet where all 50-plus kids, all parents, counselors, representatives of the Northeast Arc, we all come at the Hollywood Hits in Danvers, and the kids get a chance to see their hard work up on the big screen. So it's very, very exciting.
Tell us a little bit more about the making movies. What does that entail? Who gets involved, and how does that all come together?
Oh wow, it's a gigantic project. We've done it a couple of different ways. We have a full-time videographer that joins us for the summer. And then we also have an editor that we've hired because it's a lot of work. We have about 8 groups over the summer, and every group makes a 5 to 7 minute film. It's a tremendous labor and executive functioning. So it's a huge project that needs to get broken down into smaller pieces. So the kids get to determine what the movie is going to be about, and then it's up to our staff to sort of take all these really creative and sometimes juxtaposed ideas and kind of form them into somewhat of a cohesive story, storyboard it, and then the kids use improv acting to sort of go through the scenes, and they are in charge of creating their own props, all of their own costumes. Then we kick it out to our editor for some special effects, and then at the end they get to see it all, and then they go home with a copy of the movie.
What are some examples of the movies? The films that the students have created, topic-wise or so forth?
Well, often they're they're somewhat eclectic, and they are focused on often sort of special interests. So, like, for example, we had one where it was a good queen and a bad queen, and she had stolen a Nyan Cat, which is a YouTube reference. And then there were good guys and bad guys, and they were on this quest to try and find this cat, and the antics that they ran into kind of along the way. For our teenagers, for our older, close to transition age people who come to our program, they did public service announcements on do's and do nots, and so they did how to apply for a job interview, how to interact with a roommate, and it was very funny because they did the kind of how you do it and then some really outlandish ways of how not to do it.
Great. Now, what are some of the other activities that are part of your Spotlight program beyond the movie stuff that you do?
Yeah, well, we run programs during the weekend, during the school year. A couple of our favorite things is we offer a pizza and a video game night on Friday nights. It really is just a chance for some kids to come, and we have a very kind of structured way in which we do turn-taking and sportsmanship, and we do 2 rounds of video games and the pizza in between, where it's all facilitated sort of conversation by our amazing and fun staff.
And where is that located? That's in Danvers, or?
Yeah, this is all done in Danvers. Yep, the Northeast Arc has several buildings, and so we are on Electronics Avenue.
And you draw children from what communities?
Anywhere. So we have I would say probably a 15-mile radius, which is where most of our kids join us. But we have had kids come to us from southern New Hampshire and the South Shore as well. So
great. And Northeast Arc, beyond the program that you're director of, what are some of the other functions and areas? I know that when I looked at the website, there are a lot of different things that they do. Can you share some of that with our audience?
Absolutely. The Northeast Arc is an absolutely fantastic resource for families who have anybody with a difference in ability. We provide services from birth to senior citizen. There's an entire residential division. There's an entire employment division. And the division which Spotlight is under is family support. And so there's early intervention, intensive in-home behavior analysis, adult foster care, personal care. I mean, there's so many different programs that really support the community. Our Autism Support Center is actually celebrating 25 years of service this year.
That's great.
They've done amazing work in organizing resources for the community, and they're absolutely fantastic.
And when you talk about employment, you're trying to employ certain. Who you try to employ, and what kind of jobs are you able to connect people up with?
Well, the employment division is not one that is my specialty. However, I do know that the agency is committed in providing and finding substantial and quality employment for people with differences in ability using their skills to the best of their ability.
Great. And the residential program does what?
The residential program provides an environment for people with differences in ability to be successful as well. I really can speak the most to our family support division because that's where Spotlight is housed.
Okay. Can you share a little bit more about that with us?
Absolutely. Sure. So, family support. Some of the other and we're always looking for more people to join our teams. It's a really fantastic opportunity for people who are interested in getting involved in human service and getting involved in an organization as thoughtful and well-run as the Northeast Arc. There are a lot of different, there's a lot to offer. It's kind of difficult to kind of pick one point and dive through everything that we have. So,
great. Well, is there anything else that you can share with us?
Yeah, I mean, I would love to just, share a little bit more about just the Spotlight program just because we are doing so many exciting things. Another opportunity that we have right now is for young people, we have a whole Minecraft program. Minecraft, for those people who don't know, is sort of taking kids ages probably 7 to 18 by storm. And it's a online forum where kids can build things, and we utilize that as a way to facilitate social interactions. Oftentimes, the online community is very isolating. Our kids kind of sit by themselves and do these things. So we've developed an entire curriculum around collaboration and executive functioning to kind of create conversation while the kids are playing and building this online world, and that happens on Saturdays as well. We have programs for kids starting at 2.5 all the way up to the newly eligible. The newly eligible is something that's a really exciting opportunity at the Northeast Arc right now. We have some cool stuff happening where people who perhaps weren't able to receive funding before and they have an autism diagnosis are now able to receive some funding, and we're working collaboratively with the Autism Support Center to create some new initiatives and some new programs for folks that are interested in from some support and employment and having some tips on dating and as well as just kind of getting out of their comfort zone and having some support in that as well.
Great. What else?
Let's see. I could talk a little bit more about some documentary stuff that we're doing.
Please share that.
We had an opportunity to work with Emerson College last year to formulate a year-long project, which started off kind of as like a pipe dream with Dr. Ruth Grossman at the FACE Lab at Emerson College, where she and I just sort of had this conversation one day about, well, wouldn't it be cool to do some type of a documentary about the kids? And a collaboration was born that we had no idea what would come out of it. We took 175 hours of footage.
Wow.
And then we gave it to a poor graduate student who then had to take it all and create some type of a cohesive story with it. And we compiled an hour-long feature that really demonstrated the ability of these fantastic, remarkable young people. And that documentary was then shown in Boston at the Paramount Theater for Friends of Emerson, Friends of the Northeast Arc, as well as we did another movie premiere in Beverly at the Cabot Theater for some of the folks that weren't able to make it and people that were a little bit closer to our own agency. And we're really hoping to replicate a program like that in the future and perhaps enter it in the 48-hour film festival in Boston. And so we're in the process right now of trying to make that documentary available to the public, and we're talking to PBS as far as creating and as far as having a chance for other people to see it. So that was a really wonderful experience for a lot of different people.
And is the are there plans for further collaboration with Emerson, and what might that look like?
We'd love to. We'd absolutely love to. For this previous program was the result of a grant through the speech and language program, and we've made some connections with the folks over at Emerson. But there, at this point, there isn't any plan to do any collaboration with them at this point. Right now, we're focusing on getting summer sort of started, and as well as doing some more research. We just got our results back from a research study that we completed this summer, which demonstrated incredible efficacy in our model and showed very significant the kids demonstrated really significant improvements in their ability to do sort of social problem solving. And the parents then reported that they were able to see that the kids were less stressed out and less anxious. And so we'd love to do more research that supports our model as well. It's a different model than other social skills programs, because we say that we're more of a socially enriched environment. And we're not trying to change anybody. We're not trying to make anybody more normal, so to speak. The idea about Spotlight is really to create an environment where the kids can be their best selves and really excel in their own interests. And we do it in a natural kind of way. It's not like we teach about how to do this one thing and then we practice it. We talk about things more subtly, and we do a lot of improv. So the kids are able to kind of learn about it more naturally.
A lot of that is confidence driven?
Yeah. We definitely, self-esteem and self-determination are some of our core values.
What are the range of challenges that you you have with students who come in, how do you measure what your success is beyond what the parents say?
Well, I mean, retention would be the best part, is people who continue to come back and move up from our younger programs all the way through our teens. As far as the research specifically, it was interesting. We did it was over the summer for a 6-week summer program, and we had a graduate student from the University of New York at Stony Brook. And they came, Dr. Matt Lerner is one of the founding members of the Spotlight program, and he runs the Lerner Lab at Stony Brook, and they came to do the research. And so there was hours, again, of video footage that then they took back to the university and coded, and then did their analysis of that. So that's how we got that most recent study.
And what is it they filmed? These programs like your summer programs like Spotlight and...
Yep, they filmed. They had some very specific games that they wanted to film. So part of our day is for summer, and the core component of our program is acting and improv, because the reality of it is that, you know, we all sort of fake it till we make it. You know, we're not all proficient in everything that we do. So we teach these acting improv games that are fun and silly and incorporate the kids' specific interests, and then we kind of draw parallels to how it works in real life. So the games themselves are just hilarious and so fun to watch. And so what they did was that they took footage of consistent games. So that way, so like for example, there would be a game, it's called the counting game, where one person says one, another person says two, and you have to try and get as high as you can before two people say the same number at the same time. And one of the ways that they filmed is they looked to see how high the number, how high they got with the number, and what the cohesion was in the group. And they measured that through facial expressions and interactions and how well the kids were able to understand more subtle more subtle facial expressions as opposed to an overt smile. It was maybe a subtle grin, and they were able to then kind of approach the situation appropriately given that very subtle social cue. So it was just a really cool experience.
Tell me about your observations as the director in these programs, and as you see the individual growth of some of the students, what is that like for you?
As far as seeing the kids gain skills?
Yeah, I mean, just any part of the child development. It's I'd compare it the kid who goes out and practices basketball and then gets a basket in a game. And there's that recognition. But as a coach, you look at, you know, they look to you when they shoot when the ball goes in the hoop. What is that connection like for you?
Sure. I mean, so I guess the practice version would be, you know, the kids coming to our actual group, you know, where we do sort of facilitate conversations. So, like, for example, you know, if I have, you know, a person, one of the young people come in and they're wearing they're wearing like a Minecraft t-shirt, and then someone else comes in and they're also wearing a Minecraft t-shirt. Well, our staff, who are incredibly well trained, and we say that our staff are kind of like the fun uncle and the fun aunt. Like they're cool, you know, they're a lot cooler than me, and they come in and they're young, and they're gonna support the kids, and they might let them get away with more than, you know, their parents, but they're still, you know, the adult.
Yeah.
And the kind of fun counselors might start talking to one of the kids about Minecraft and then say, oh, hey, you know, Joey over here is into Minecraft too. You know, what's your favorite? You know, do you use creative or survival mode? And then they sort of facilitate that conversation and fade themselves out. So what happens with the kids is they get practice on how to have a positive social interaction that's supported and facilitated. And then it becomes less scary. So when they have an opportunity to make a friend or to talk to somebody else about Minecraft in the community, they've already done it, and they've done it successfully. And so then we might, when we see them again, when they come back, you know, either the next session, you know, they come back and they say, oh, you know, I met so-and-so, and they're into Minecraft too. And, you know, one of the greatest successes would be to hear about one of our group members or our participants formulating an outside relationship completely organically that then becomes something really significant for them. So you hear about, parents will come in and say, you know, he's never had a play date. Nobody ever calls the house. You know, we're never invited to birthday parties. And now all of a sudden, you know, the invitations start coming and the friends start happening. And there's a sense of a person's own value that's actually recognized in that time.
Great. Well, I appreciate the time you've taken to be with us and share all the good things that the Northeast ARC is involved in, and certainly the successes you're enjoying with the Spotlight program. If people wanted to learn more about...
Yeah, absolutely. Please check out our website, which is spotlightprogram.com. And then you can find us on Facebook, on Twitter, and on Instagram. And then we're also on YouTube. So if you check out our YouTube channel, you'll get a chance to see some of the kooky antics that we get ourselves into.
Great. Thank you for being a guest on.
Thank you so much. So nice to talk to you.
Take care.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Well, I apologize for a little intermittent connection problems here. We're still having trouble with Comcast, and I hope to get that cleared up. It's been a couple of weeks now, so we'll keep working on it. And got my old trusty AT&T hotspot that works out. But right now we're using that to broadcast games. We'll have a basketball game tomorrow night, or as Josh says, a basketball game tomorrow night. So we'll have basketball on MSO News Sports. Bill Newell will have more on that later on. We'll also have a hockey game on Saturday night coming from Gloucester at 6 o'clock. Turning now, will be Thursday mornings at 10 a.m., and you've got some good guests lined up for the duration.
I do, and I don't have them all in front of me, but great people up and down the North Shore, and we're going to be talking more and more with folks at the State House as well, and talk about some of current legislation that's on the table, and just the, well, of course, the whole state budget process will be unfolding and how that plays out for cities and towns.
Good Lord willing, and the creek don't rise. I'll be talking with Salem Senator Joan Lovely tomorrow, and we'll have that posted on the website sometime tomorrow as well. So that'll take care of that for now. Don't forget Trending Now with Josh Arnold coming up on Thursdays at 10 a.m. And that's it. We'll be back.
This is MSO Web Radio at morestuffonline.com.